You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Now, in our interview, Yi spoke about the limits he foresees in making ever more accurate clocks. I loved his line about the clocks eventually being limited by the symphony of the universe. Such clocks would be so sensitive that they could be used, as he described, to pick up gravitational waves. And as you push down further, you may find that you simply cannot shield the clocks from that noise, the cacophony of collisions between black holes and neutron stars. But there's another way of thinking about the limits on timekeeping, in terms of thermodynamics, the science of heat and energy transfer. This has huge practical implications for scientists and engineers shrinking devices down to the nanoscale and below, for housing on chips or injecting into the body. Quantum physicist Markus Huber at the Institute for Quantum Optics and Quantum Information in Vienna, Austria, and colleagues devised an experiment to test how entropy, or disorder, increases as your nano clock becomes more accurate. He spoke with reporter Toby Fitzpatrick about this thermodynamic price that must be paid for clock precision.
And it was one of these conferences that it was super interdisciplinary. It was about quantum networks, something entirely different. And we'll all just be sitting at the conference dinner and Pauli...
The voice you're hearing is that of Markus Huber. He's a research scientist who specializes in bringing together two disparate areas of physics, the nanoscopic realm of quantum physics and the Industrial Revolution era physics of thermodynamics. He's talking about a key moment in the design of a machine, only a few atoms thick, a moment of collaboration that would result in a paper published last year whose results are helping us understand the fundamental limits placed on timekeeping and how the universe's unstoppable tendency towards disorder may be behind it all.
My name is Markus Huber. I'm a quantum physicist from Vienna. I work at two different institutions, the Technical University, the Atom Institute.
Before we began talking about the recently published paper measuring the thermodynamic cost of timekeeping, I wanted to learn a little bit more about the differences between the way physicists see timekeeping versus time itself.
So there is this whole operationalist idea where you're trying to discern the ontology of things, that is the nature or the reality behind our physical laws from what we can actually measure, right? And so in some sense, taking the model we have, the most accurate model we have of our microscopic universe is quantum theory, and we take it for granted. But in it, even in the relativistic version, time just appears as a almost classical parameter. What people are hoping for is that one day we'll have a deeper understanding of time when we understand quantum gravity or unification of things. But even before that, even within quantum theory, even though there is this parameter which should be guiding our equations, it is intriguing to see that this parameter, while it sits there in the background of the model, it's still kind of unknowable to perfection. So it's not an observable we can just measure, and it's essentially the only way we can tell that this parameter has moved forward is by the action and the output of a clock. And doing so is fundamentally imprecise.
Lots of quantum physics hinges on our ability to observe, or more specifically measure, attributes of these tiny systems. However, with time, it's treated differently. It's an ever-present continuous parameter that's placed into the equations of quantum physics. It doesn't just jump out at physicists as a consequence of the equations. Clocks are our way of measuring how much time has passed in one system based on the time taken for a repetitive natural process to occur in another system. Here's how Markus sees things.
You can think of separating the process in two parts. So for one, the one thing you'll always need with every clock that is universal is an irreversible process, i.e. a process that basically has a directionality in time, right? This irreversibility essentially has more of a thermodynamic origin. So the only thing we can point to that has this irreversibility is the second law of thermodynamics. So every clock needs to have somehow built in an increase in entropy, some second law-like irreversibility, some we call it equilibration or thermalization, the tendency of out of equilibrium physical systems tending towards an equilibrium, right? And then, of course, there is a second component, which is just as important if you want to tell time well, which is kind of a periodic process in the background, something that oscillates, something that repeats, something that should then be coupled to this irreversibility to together make a well-functioning clock.
So all you need is irreversibility and the ability to repeat itself. It sounds like you could make a clock out of pretty much anything.
Well, time is kind of a relative thing, right? We count a number of events in system A by a number of events in system B. If you put a coffee cup on your table, there is a very practical way, right? I could say I could cook my eggs until my coffee is drinkable from searing hot. And that's a good measure of time because the time it takes for an egg to be cooked might coincide with the time for the coffee to cool down. So I can use it as a practical clock. And I can even imagine in some situations, if you don't have a clock at hand, it might be a very rudimentary device to tell how much time has passed. But of course, it doesn't have really any periodicity. It just equilibrates and then it's dead. So it's a kind of a one-off clock or it needs to be recharged. I can make a new coffee all the time. So it's better to think of a bit more intricate clock designs where some irreversible process is kind of interweaved with some periodic process. Even the first sundials are a perfect example, right? So the movement of the Earth around the sun, this is a kind of a periodic process. I mean, it's not a very accurate clock because it basically takes a whole year. Or the rotation of the Earth around its own axis is also a good periodic process. At least it takes only 24 hours. And the sundials were able to make use of the latter, right? I mean, the Earth's rotation around its own axis, it basically projects shadows. And then from the shadows, we can read off the time of day, if there are no clouds, and if it's day, and so on and so forth. However, there is an irreversible component, and it's not so hidden, right? The reason we can see it is because the sun is equilibrating constantly, right? It's burning its fuel. It sends out these photons, since it is basically bombarding Earth all the time. And this is the irreversible process we're using. But it's not a very efficient one, right? Because the period is very bad, with 24 hours-ish, and the amount of energy and entropy expended by the sun is, of course, huge.
So now we come back to the experiment that Marcus's group in Austria, along with a group at Oxford University, devised. What is this tiny machine that can help us understand the relationship between the accuracy of timekeeping and entropy, and how this behaves going from a classical to a quantum scale?
The experiment is rather simple conceptually, because what we're really doing is we're driving a nanomechanical membrane. So like a little drum skin, you know, like if you hit a drum, it starts vibrating, makes a nice sound or not, depending how well you play. And this resonant vibration is essentially what we're using in a readout. So in particular, our membrane is coupled to a little circuit. So it's a little capacitor. So essentially, you're inducing a current by the distance of the drum surface to the bottom. So you can imagine that there's a little circuit on the bottom of the drum, and depending on whether the drum is up or down, like the drum skin is up or down, there's a difference in potential, and this induces a little current, and this current can be measured. What happens is that when the drum starts vibrating, you start measuring electricity going around in your circuit.
The most accurate clocks these days are astoundingly precise. After 100 million years, they will only be off by maybe 1 second. There is a downside, however. It can take days and days of computation time before you know how much time passed. That's not very useful if you want to know what's happening in a system in real time.
Our particular experiment, which we deliberately did in a room temperature environment without optimizing for any of this, is not a technological competition to the most advanced atomic clocks there are. Neither for resolution nor for accuracy. On both, it sits somewhere in between, but actually on a pretty bad scale. The purpose of this clock so far was not a pure technological advancement of timekeeping devices. The point was that these systems themselves allowed us something that is otherwise very hard to do. It is to actually measure the entropic outputs, i.e. we were able to measure all the energy that is dissipated in running the clock in a complete and self-contained bookkeeping and explore how the amount of entropy dissipated dictates the quality of the clock.
As Marcus says, it's this clock's ability to measure the quantity of entropy that makes it unique. Entropy can be thought of in a statistical way, to be the natural tendency of something to be more disordered after an event than before it. This is simply because the number of configurations that appear to be disorderly vastly outweigh those that appear orderly. What Huber's research is saying is that a quantum clock's accuracy is fundamentally limited by the amount of entropy it creates every single tick. If you want an infinitely accurate clock, you need to be creating infinite entropy.
In the end, our relationship, this linear relationship, that was kind of an idealized one. One that you would think maybe in the most ideal system where everything's controlled and you have every precise little entropy leak under control, that's the best you can achieve. But in practice, you're not going to see it. There's so many other effects, especially once you go to larger systems, like almost the classical scale, these nanomembranes. I mean, they're still pretty large for a quantum system, right? Then it presented the first plot and it showed us the first preliminary data, and it was really just almost a perfectly straight line. I was like, okay, wow, that's that's impressive. I was almost confused, and I thought that it's impossible that we caught this relationship so well. Then one of our co-authors, one of the experimentalists, Edward, he also started coming up with a classical model for clock accuracy, trying to a bit more closely model the kind of the noise-driven membranes. And he also derived this linear relationship there. So then we had two completely independent domains, both predicting the same kind of qualitative behavior as the one that our experiment, which kind of sits in the middle of quantum and classical physics, also observes.
So this research not only shows us that the entropy increases linearly with clock accuracy, but that this understanding of timekeeping seems to be the same on both the everyday scale and the quantum scale. Was this a surprising result?
It's not been so much on the radar, this entire question. I mean, there are a couple of really good physicists around the world who have, before us, made the point that, yeah, the clocks need to dissipate entropy, but this quantitative relationship between entropy and clock quality was actually something rather new. So I don't think many people have thought about it. In some sense, people were surprised we were able to measure this so closely, but at the same time, they still think maybe this is not the best that can be achieved, and maybe there is a different way of thinking about it. It's more that we kind of kickstarted a renewed interest into these questions more than actually answering once and for all this relationship.
This research received funding from FQXI's drive to understand how information could be used as a fuel. And this clock could be very useful in helping us answer that question.
The whole information as fuel question is one that we've been pondering for a long time. And one of the biggest roadblocks there is a lack of understanding of what does it actually cost to measure time, right? So there are all of these early examples of Maxwell's demon, an entity that can at will open a wall between two containers to sort particles to hot and cold. And you'd think, somehow the information the demon has about the particles has a value as a fuel, because the demon, by virtue of knowing the particles' positions and speeds, can basically sort them, put all the hot particles to the right, all the cold particles to the left, and then you can run a heat engine on it. So clearly the information has value as fuel. But when, of course, this entity doesn't exist, and then the question is, how would you actually measure? How would you actually control this, right? But what you really need is a precise timing. You need to know what a quantum system is going to be like at a certain time, and you need to be able to precisely time your operations. Same with the running of your car engine, right? You need to know when to inject the fuel, when to ignite it, and so on and so forth. These are well-timed operations. And classically, it doesn't matter so much, right? Yes, I need a clock, so to speak, to run my car engine, but the energy consumption of that is minuscule compared to what the car actually outputs, so who cares? But once you go down to the smaller domain, either to investigate the very foundations of the information and thermodynamics connection, or even more practically to time operations on a quantum computer, for instance, these questions do become very relevant. And so one of the precursors to even thinking about information as fuel is to understand the thermodynamic cost of timekeeping. And this is why we're going down that direction.
That was Marcus Huber chatting with reporter Toby Fitzpatrick. I'm adding links to his paper in Physical Review X and to some of the news write-ups about the work in Quanta and New Scientist magazine. Huber collaborated with FQXI member Natalia Ares, a quantum physicist at Oxford University, on the project. And you can find out more about other research projects by Huber's group and Ares's group on the site too.